Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my Epic Movies. This week, we thank you personally. We have made it all the way to movie number 300. And in order to accomplish this, we needed support from you. And in order to celebrate it, we got into one of our oft-requested, truly horrible movies, the John Travolta Scientology movie, Battlefield Earth. Now, I want to thank each of you personally. Obviously, I can't, but I want you to know that we appreciate how much you do for us, all your views and downloads and sharing and all that kind of stuff. Now, a humble request for all of you. We know this is a movie that you have wanted us to for a while. We think it's a great episode, and it's a big round number. And you know how much people like a big round number. So, can you help me share this to make sure this is our biggest episode ever? I'd truly appreciate it, and it would be a nice cap for all those who have been with us along the way, our guests, our editors, our helpers. Thanks, guys. Really, from the bottom of my heart. Welcome to episode 300 of Myopia Movies. We finally did it, and to do it, I have some of the longest-running regulars. Daniel?
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to popdose.com, and a servant of the Dark Master, Xenu. May he forever reign.
And Matt Quinn.
Go check out my book, The Atlanta Incursion, if you want to watch him, if you want to watch or read a book about an alien invasion involved giving the Church of Scientology money.
You know what? Fine. I'm sure it's a better book than Battlefield Earth.
Well, and I would say, shorter. I would say, if you want to see this movie done better, just watch Planet of the Apes, because it's exactly Planet of the Apes.
You could watch Waterworld, and that's a better version of this movie.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, Waterworld is better than this.
Oh, God. Waterworld is terrible, though. It's trash. It's Kevin Costner trash.
It's not great, but it is better than this.
It is much better than this, yes. And I'm your host, Nick Hoffman. You know that by now. So we are doing the Scientology movie, funded by Scientology and John Travolta, who both took a bath on this.
For the greater glory of Scientology.
He was trying to make this movie since the 80s when the book came out. I believe it's L. Ron Hubbard's best-selling book, other than Dianetics.
Well, I mean, because the Church of Scientology would buy like a million copies so that it would get on the New York Times bestseller list.
And originally, Travolta was going to play Turl. And then it took 20 years to make the movie.
He's going to play Johnny.
Yes.
Johnny, yes. Then it took 20 years to make it. And so he plays the villain Turl in this movie, guys.
Even John Waters would have told Travolta, hey, maybe don't be so campy.
Yeah, this is awful. Awful, awful, guys. The budget here is listed at various points because this whole thing was a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, I think that there was some fraud involved.
There was a lawsuit involved of the studio inflating the budget.
Yeah, so the movie cost $78 million, which
on paper, which is
like $100 million today. But after the lawsuit, it turned out that nearly $30 million of it was embezzled. The actual budget for this movie was only $44 million, and it made back after international box office only about $29 million.
Now, I remember seeing
who was stealing the money. Did they ever figure out who it was?
Oh, I think it was the studio heads.
Yeah, Franchise Pictures, which is established by a dry cleaning mogul. It's all bad.
Man's got to have a dream.
Now, I remember seeing the trailer for this in theaters back in the day. I didn't see the actual movie, but I remember people like seeing it and genuinely being excited, like old school sci-fi fans.
I mean, L. Ron Hubbard, for all his later career, was one of the greats.
Was he?
He was productive.
He was productive, cool. Certainly, and I know he's got a cult following amongst sci-fi fans, but was he really one of the greats?
No, he was from the time of Asimov and Heinlein and all them.
Yes, but being from the same time period as someone doesn't mean a lot, you know. I'm from the same time period of a lot of important people. He had at one point the Guinness Book for the most books published.
I always assumed that was Mao's Little Red Book.
No, not total copies. I'm just saying individual books published.
Ah, okay.
He had the most, and remember, he had like 1,000 short stories published. He was not known for editing his own work. He would just write and then send stuff out.
Like, was he the guy who would write on like butcher paper and just, okay, yeah.
He would get a butcher paper, feed it through a typewriter, and just type it all in one giant sheet.
Frankly, I don't want to dwell on the Scientology connection with this. It's bad enough on its own. So I do just want to go ahead and say this. There's obviously a ton of baggage. Yes, Scientology is a pyramid scheme. Yes, David Miscavige is a trash human being. Yep. But so are Kenneth Copeland. So is Joel Osteen. Yep. So are a whole bunch of people who pretty much do the same thing, and they don't get nearly the shit, and I don't know why.
Well, that's what Neil deGrasse Tyson said. He said evangelicals should not look down on Scientology.
A lot of evangelicals, especially the Calvinists, really hate Osteen, too. I think he's a life coach.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean...
He is.
I don't disagree with Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think he's right in that sense. Now, obviously, if you feel you're getting something out of that, good for you. Don't listen to me. I'm just a dumb asshole, but... Come on, if you're even questioning it, it's clearly not on the level.
Yeah, he is also, of course, a petty criminal. He was arrested for fraud, he was arrested for petty theft, and for polygamy.
Well, I mean, his...
And he lied about his war record.
The Church of Scientology, like, was behind the biggest act of domestic espionage in history, right?
Yeah, Operation Snow White. Which was designed to get leverage, which is a key term that comes up several times in this movie.
Yeah, how does Cyclo society function? Everyone's always trying to find something to blackmail somebody with.
Thank you, Matt, for bringing us back to the movie, because I didn't want to talk really about the background of Scientology anymore.
Well, I will say, speaking of lawsuits, Gene Roddenberry had a suit here, because if these are really the Cyclos, it's 100% just Klingons.
Yeah.
Like, they look like Klingons, except they're fat and a lot taller.
Well, and
they're not taller. They just have those gigantic kiss boots.
No, they are absolutely taller. They're supposed to be 10 feet tall in here. And that's why when Travolta is around other people, he looks like a jackass because he's walking on stilts. Also, I don't know how they got Forrest Whitaker in here. I imagine
the money
dump truck up to his house because he clearly does not want to be here.
Well, Barry Pepper also was a big deal at the not a huge deal, but he was in some.
Say, watch the B word thing.
He had been in some actual movies like Enemy of the State and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, and somehow in this movie, especially in the beginning when he's jumping around trying to scare people, he is so dorky, and so Travolta's a better actor than this too. Why are so many people who've been in other stuff as good, so bad?
Well, there's answers. First, there's director. There's no director here.
It was Travolta, clearly.
Yes, 100%.
Well, officially, the director is Oscar winner Roger Christian, who was the set decorator for the original Star Wars, mm-hmm. and the second unit director for Phantom Menace, which I don't know what second unit footage was in that movie, but that's his credit.
I'm going to guess it's all the gleep glops and space shots, because that's the only thing that looks good here are like the big establishing shots and areas. Nothing like he doesn't know how to film a character to save his fucking life.
Well, he's using a fucking tripod that's got one of the legs sinking into the ground.
Dude, everything is in Dutch angles. I was getting nauseous. Like,
okay. The phrase Dutch angle keeps coming up for like years. What's a Dutch angle?
So if you're facing the person, I'm kind of trying to describe this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's underneath, the camera is below the person and about 45 degrees to the left or to the right. It's designed to look more intense, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, no one is ever in frame. This movie doesn't follow the rule of thirds once. And there's a green filter on everything, which is weird because it's supposed to be Earth.
Yeah, the mall fight scene early on, everything slowly turns green. I thought that was maybe the lights in the mall, but the mall's been dead for 1,000 years. It wouldn't have lights.
There's a scene in here that rips off the lobby shootout from The Matrix.
It is.
That's probably also why there's a green filter.
The year before.
Yes.
I will also say, just to round out this nonsense, because none of this should work. On paper, it doesn't work, and in practice, it's even worse. But the screenwriter, the scriptwriter, is a guy named J. David Shapiro, who's best known for writing Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah. I think he was a director, too. He directed some Shia LaBeouf movie.
It's possible. But, like, that's why every time Turl speaks, he's being snarky and pissy, because you have a comedy writer who wrote for, like, Charles in Charge and shit, and Who's the Boss, doing your sci-fi drama.
Yes, rat brain.
Oh, God. Rat brains and man animals.
So much stupid things going on with Turl, the main villain. But can we go ahead and back up and like try and explain what happens in this movie?
I can try. Very I'll simply. Try. Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Matt, you know what? You're the sci-fi author. You're the one.
First of all, after drastic psychological evaluation. He has actually seen this movie twice now.
Oof. Well, we're supposed to be, you know, this is movies, a lot of these are movies you've also seen before. I think I saw at least a big part of this on TV
around the time
it came out.
I remember it being on the Sci-Fi Channel back in the day and seeing, like, the ending.
Okay, is it worse, better or worse than, like, Mega Shark versus Piranha Plus or whatever they're calling
it's
these
worse
days?
Because, again, the amount of money involved.
Like, and it takes itself way too seriously.
And I will say, I saw bits of this because I was working at a multiplex at the time. And we showed it for all of a week. Like, this movie was a financial disaster. But, like, so I've seen, you're an usher. You see chunks of the movies to check to make sure people weren't making out, you know, giving a hojo in the back of the theater. The problem was no one was in the theater. So you stick in your head in for 30 seconds. Oh, wait, it's empty again? Fine.
I would love to know the person who try and give a hojo in the back of the theater to this movie.
Well, the problem is, like,
if he says man animal squeeze,
that's right. There you go.
If he says rat brain pinch,
but when you try that, you want it to be not a completely empty theater, because then it's even more suspicious. Just like two sweaty teens, like, I'm gonna buy a ticket for Battlefield Earth. You're like, you're obviously going in there to make out. Like,
yeah,
there's no other reason. Like, oh, yeah, that John Travolta really packs the kids in.
You know what? Frankly, if I was the theater manager, I wouldn't care. It's like, you know what? We're fine. We're actually making money off this damn movie, so go ahead.
I mean, otherwise, you're just, like, leaving the lights on because no one's in the theater.
Okay, so it takes place in the year 3000.
The year 3000.
And 1,000 years previously, Earth has been conquered by the Cyclos. Who are aliens, who are the greediest species imaginable. They're after the gold. In the book, they'd found the Voyager and the gold plate. And humanity has reduced like 30,000 people living in these isolated areas where there's a lot of radiation because uranium interacts with the Cyclos' breathing gas and makes them explode. And so humanity is slowly dying out because all the radiation in these areas is causing stillbirths and deformities. And with the exception of the Scots, except they're not in the movie, they're in the book, people have been reduced to cavemen.
Did you read the book?
Yeah.
Wow. That's like 1,000 pages of nonsense.
I will suffer for you.
You know what?
I will suffer for art.
Classic sci-fi fan, I can understand. Mitt Romney's apparently a big fan of the book.
I was drinking and I nearly spat this all over my computer.
Yeah, so the Cyclos, we mentioned earlier, I'm not sure how they have a functioning civilization considering how they're prone to backstabbing each other, which in the books is caused by them being ruled by psychiatrists, which they left out of the movie. Because
you know
even
what?
They realized they couldn't go that far.
That was the right call. Otherwise, it just becomes an anti-capitalist movie. Because they're like, they talk about bureaucracy and corporate espionage for an hour of this two-hour movie.
Basically, the plot is that Turl, the security chief, once run an off-the-books mining operation, mining gold in areas where Cyclos can't go because, again, uranium makes their breathing gas explode. So he kidnaps a bunch of humans to basically enslave them. And in order to make that work, he has to teach them how to use Cyclo technology, and that bites him in the ass big time.
That's right.
All right.
Because using Cyclo, the fact that they go from being cavemen to at least knowing geometry, they can scavenge a bunch of leftover military equipment, including a freaking nuclear bomb, which the Amazon... You can watch on Amazon, they actually explain, if you take a bomb out of the missile, it won't work. It's designed that way, so they can't do what Johnny just did. Amazon is making fun of this movie.
Well, so in other words, the movie's about humans rising up against alien overlords that had conquered Earth 1,000 years ago because they wanted to mine gold.
And everyone in this movie is a freaking moron.
Yes. Now, I do have... I know I've been trying to draw it away from this, but I do have one other story when it comes to...
Scientology.
Yes. Well, I do have a copy of the book. I've never read it, but the fact I have a copy delights me because I got it for free for participating in the Dragon Con blood drive.
Yeah.
And
they're cloning you. They took your blood and they're trying to clone you.
Probably. And, of course, there's been a couple years when they actually, outside of the vendor area... where they had that giant statue of what Turl's actually supposed to look like based on the book. He's like this ape thing that's covered in brown fur, and he's got this like he's got a tiny head and a silver helmet on.
Yeah, Frank Frazetta, the great fantasy artist, has this really iconic image of a Cyclo throwing down with, you know, Johnny, who's
right.
like a half-naked caveman with a knife, and you've got this like space Bigfoot.
And you know what? That image looks awesome. But Jesus Christ, the way they do it in the movie... costume designer was just clearly raiding Rob Zombie's wardrobe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like, And let me, and again, this is back to L. Ron Hubbard, but remember, like, he was writing forever, and so a lot of his characters are very, like, Edgar Rice Burroughs-y, like, you know, American blondes, mm-hmm. like, strong-chested men who beat up, you know, bad guys, and, like, that's all of his short stories are that way. And, I mean, I guess we should also mention, this is a passion project of John Travolta.
Of course it is.
I think in the early art, at least I've read this online, the early art for Battlefield Earth, Johnny Goodboy Tyler, the protagonist, looks a lot like L. Ron Hubbard. Like, we have reached full Mary Sue here.
Well, no, I mean, first of all, that's hilarious because I've seen...
So he looks like Van Morrison?
Yeah, he looks like a chubby Van Morrison. Well,
younger L. Ron Hubbard as opposed
to... So still
to,
Van Morrison, yeah, then.
I mean, L. Ron Hubbard here, I mean... I don't know when young was, but at the age of 30, he already looked like a...
He looked like me, frankly. He had my...
Is that a bad thing?
Well, he had the same body type as me.
I was going to bring up just briefly, it's weird that Travolta did this movie now, because remember, this is the resurgence, right? Because 94 is Pulp Fiction, and after that, he's got a string of hits.
Get Shorty,
95. 96 is a weird year, but Phenomenon, Michael, and Broken Arrow are all huge movies. They're not great movies, but they're big movies. The 97 is Face Off, and the 98 is Thin Red Line and Primary Colors.
Primary Colors.
99 is Stay Tuned, The General's Daughter.
Can we do Primary Colors too? That was actually an interesting movie. It's especially
Clinton, and it's clearly, yeah. It's a, what is it, George Stephanopoulos' book?
No, it was some writer for Newsweek. I forget the person's name.
But then this comes out in 2000. But it's a blip and the symbol of the downturn, because the next year is Swordfish, and then Ladder 49, and Basic, and The Punisher, which is a 100% Stay Tuned.
I remember Ladder 49. That's the firefighting movie with, what's his name, Joaquin Phoenix in it?
Yeah, directed the J. Russell movie.
Is that the 9/11 movie?
Yeah, it's one of a thousand.
Yeah, it's not quite a 9/11 movie, but it's close.
It's when we were so excited about firefighters being in stuff. It's one of that wave of post 9/11 firefighter and cop like hero movies.
Because I remember there was a movie that follows a bunch of firefighters through 9/11. I thought that's what it was.
No, that's the Nick Cage movie.
An Oliver Stone movie as well, if I recall.
Yeah, there's United 93, which is Clint Eastwood, right?
No, that was the guy who did Paul Greengrass.
I like Paul Greengrass, but there's about a thousand too many cuts in those movies. Mm. So thank you, Matt, for trying to get us through that plot synopsis.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff makes no sense. Like, Turl is claiming they conquered the Earth in 9 minutes. There's so much lying around. I mean,
we
can't conquer find...
the Earth in 9 minutes.
You couldn't even find all the armies and soldiers on Earth in 9 minutes.
Well, here's the other thing about this. We've already gone through the end.
They don't even find Fort Knox.
We've already gone through the ending a little bit with them finding the Harrier jets. But my God. Okay, so imagine if in Independence Day, humanity defeated the aliens by finding a 1,000-year-old trebuchet, and that somehow works. What the fuck?
Well, Nick is going to probably dump that beer on my head and bring up the book. The book at least made more sense. They sent in a giant Independence Day gas drone that killed off most of the human race, then sent in follow-ups.
Well, that makes sense.
To finish off the survivors.
But okay, but my question is then, that was 1,000 years before, right? Because this movie comes out in 2000, so 1,000 years in the future is 3,000, right? Like, that's what they're thinking. Does the Cyclos technology not improve at all in 1,000 years?
Well, they're that arrogant, maybe not.
Yeah, but that's
that makes no sense.
But again, like, your metaphor is correct. Like, in 1020, 1,000 years ago, like, we're still poking berries up our noses to see what fits. Like, you know? It just, the Cyclos technology, and, I mean, the other thing, which is stupid, they've been on Earth for 1,000 years and they still can't breathe the air.
Now, here's
if they really wanted gold, you'd probably find gold in space, unless it's like some sort of weird sadist thing where they want to conquer a planet and kill people. Why bother?
The gold thing makes no sense. I mean, again, it's supposed to be greedy capitalists and apparently psychiatrists, but like the funny thing about this is they keep bringing up things like the head of, like, the board of directors and,
oh my God, the bureaucracy.
It's evil middle management. It's like Rogue One, except Rogue One was better.
Battlefield Earth, it's like Rogue One, except Rogue One was better.
I would
hope. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that Rogue One is really good and Battlefield Earth sucks. Which reminds me, he's inspired to rebel by reading the Declaration of Independence.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to complain too much, but it does come off as a tad bit.
How does it survive 1,000 years?
Well, there are lots
thousand
of,
years.
If it's in a building that's closed.
But also, like, first of all, two things. it's also supposed to look like the original Declaration of Independence, and it has a cover like the original Declaration of Independence does. It would have been funny if, first of all, it's an incredibly stupid scene. That's also something that makes it feel very Planet of the Apes-y, like, but like, just pick up like a Glencoe textbook of American history.
Right.
That's just as easy.
Or do the Fallout thing and like hack into an old computer.
This is 100% Fallout, by the way. Like, and there was that one scene early on where they've got all the man animals and they're walking through like a graveyard of cars outside of an abandoned parking deck. And I'm just like, this is, I would be like rummaging through all these cars looking for bottle caps. Like, that's all this feels like.
The biggest way to improve this movie would have been
don't
to
do it.
Yes, don't do it. But center it on the humans. Make the Cyclos some sort of abstract threat that they rarely see, which my understanding is that was the entire point of the species initially, right? Well, like, the humans were separate tribes that were isolated from each other. And even at the start, I mean, there's that bit where Johnny is saying, have you ever actually seen a demon? Which implies that Cyclos are myths. Well, that would have worked a whole lot better.
We need to describe this scene because the first hour of this movie, you have almost no idea what's going on. Like, first 45 minutes, we start out, smash cut. First of all, there's a scroll, and God help us, there's a scroll. Mm.
Well,
and
Star Wars set decorator, that makes sense.
There's a scroll. The one I didn't see didn't have a scroll.
There is a scroll.
There is absolutely a scroll that explains some of this stuff. But we then smash cut to this hovel filled with a bunch of, like, becladded nonsense caveman people.
They're white people, except Chrissy, I think, living like Native Americans, complete with buckskins.
Yeah.
And they have horses still.
At least one.
Who gets shot through the fucking head in a mall. But what I was going to say is there's this old dude who's talking about the demons and the old gods and evil and blah, 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 blah.
That's another thing. They never establish who the gods are to humanity. In 1,000 years, they become pagan, but they never explain, okay, what are the gods?
Well, they do, though. They end up on a mini golf course, and they think that the dragon on hole 12 is a god, and he gets beaten to shit by a putter.
Oh, that dinosaur.
Yes. In the ancient Rome, maybe 10% of the population can read, and they didn't forget their entire history.
I mean, A and two, the other god that we get is like a Pep Boys statue. It looks like something out of the Soviet Union. It's a giant statue holding a wrench.
You know what? If they wanted to do this properly, and Scientology would have had the money, go ahead and pay to license the McDonald's arches and have people use that as a religious symbol.
Or Bob's Big Boy.
Yes.
Ripping off. I mean, this movie is nothing but stealing from other things. Might as well steal from Austin Powers at this point.
Or bloody hell, you make one tribe worship the Arby's cowboy hat and the other one worship the arches, and they're at war with each other. There you go.
Can you imagine a dude with a poorly drawn arches tattoo? Like, or like a Christian crucifix around a neck, like an arches necklace, and someone else wearing a dumb Arby's cowboy hat?
No, but I want to see it now.
We have the meats.
You do realize, though, you've just described a scene that is not filmed in Demolition Man as well, because there's the fast food wars and Taco Bell has won.
Yes.
Right? That's... Like, can you imagine just Jared Fogle with a giant Subway sandwich beating the shit out of Wendy?
Actually, yes. Yes, I can. Fuck you, Jared Fogle. I'm glad you're in prison.
He'd do worse to Wendy.
Just randomly.
And then the Burger King can kill him.
Just randomly. AP exams are over, and I was showing one class, Supersize Me, and I forgot that there's a Jared Fogle cameo.
Yes, sure is.
And he goes up and talks to a middle schooler afterward, and I'm just like, oh, that scene hits much differently now.
Oh, man.
That's a problematic documentary for a lot of reasons, but it's entertaining. It's
So they fail to establish the world of this movie. There were so many better ways they could have done it.
Yeah.
After they fail to establish it, they lean back on ripping off better movies. So like at literally around 11 minutes, I took notes. There's a Blade Runner ripoff with Johnny running through multiple panes of glass.
Sure. When we first see the Cyclo Cap home planet or the Cyclo City on Earth, I get some serious Blade Runner vibes. You see the giant mega city and like the gas fire.
Yes, you're absolutely
Blade
right,
Blade Runner
Matt.
Looked better, even if it was made in 1980, whatever.
Two.
1980, well, it was made in 1981, I would assume,
right, yeah.
But yeah.
Came out. I mean, and the other things about this are, like, how do I put this in a nice way? Because I do like Star Wars, but it suffers from major gleep glop syndrome. Like,
they never explain anything.
But they do these long, loving shots of these costumes that don't matter, and then they don't establish anything in exchange.
And they look like shit anyway.
They're ugly, but there's a lot of effort being put into making this man look like a conehead with dreadlocks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
And a chick with a 3-foot tongue.
That was John Travolta's wife who unfortunately has since passed away from breast cancer, I believe.
2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Something like that. May she rest in peace. That's terrible.
Well, and dude, she has a widow's peak on this that is just insane. Like, God help me. They're at a bar at one point, and Forrest Whitaker apparently really spiked his surge with whiskey because he's just sitting there like, ew.
Oh, it's that Kerbongo, because they reference Kerbongo a couple times in this movie but never explain what it is.
I assume Kerbongo is that green crap they were drinking.
But they never explain it.
They don't explain
alien space booze.
Well, which would have been great if there was a flavor of Mountain Dew called Kerbongo and it came out of Taco Bell and it caused immediate diarrhea.
Except...
Maybe the movie make its money if they licensed it.
Except babies can apparently drink this stuff.
It's like Synthahol in Star Trek. Again, the problem with this world, and in sci-fi you've got to establish one thing, which is there has to be a character with dignity. There's no characters. That's why it's so important that Spock exists in that world and Dr. McCoy, because they are people who have dignity. If you're just running around saying, this is a stupid world and I'm a stupid person in it, no one's going to give a shit. Like, you're not going to get that telenovela published, right?
Yeah. Turl is established, you know, he's doing a bunch of exact words bullshit with a bartender who apparently he's blackmailing or something, and he's just an asshole to everyone.
Damn it, Jim, I can't find any gold on this planet.
At least McCoy was a competent doctor, even if he was grouchy and kind of racist. Turl is just a dick.
He's a colossal asshole.
One of the things, and seriously, this whole thing revolves around Travolta. One of the notes I have is, Travolta's so hammy in this movie, he may as well be served at a Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, dude, he is just spitting fire. It's just like, you thought you could get leverage on me? Oh, God.
Man, animal, you think you can use our technology?
By the way, like,
only an idiot wouldn't know that you don't store guns unloaded, or whatever it was he was saying.
You don't store guns loaded, which is, I guess, an NRA message halfway through this.
Is this like a gun safety PSA?
It wouldn't surprise me if the NRA and Scientology teamed up.
What's his name? LaPierre is a secret Scientologist. Also, I was convinced Brad Dourif was this bartender.
Better casting.
Well, at least there would have been someone to do anything, because this actor, like, if you told me it was a stagehand, I would have believed it. Because at the end, he gets his head cut off, and I'm just like, oh, Brad Dourif's dead.
Oh, yeah, John Travolta cuts the bartender's head off.
Because Forrest Whitaker had given him the leverage on John Travolta, and you're just like, stop saying leverage!
It's an arc word.
Forrest Whitaker is one of my favorite actors of all time. He is so good in so many things. And then he is just...
slumming it.
He's just completely giving up his dignity to be in this movie.
He plays like the security chief's like secretary or something. You spend most of the movie just getting abused by him.
The second in command, Kelly Preston's the secretary with her 3-foot tongue,
and he's supposed to be. We should talk about this one scene where like the high command comes back, like the board of trustees comes. And Travolta thinks he's being relieved. Like, this is a temporary post that he's been put in.
If I may interrupt you real quick, this is the whole thing that drives John Travolta's characters. And yes, I know it's Turl, but frankly, I don't care. It's Travolta. His motivation throughout the entire movie is this scene right here where he's getting screwed over by the corporation, which they never explain what that is, and then just decides to train the man animals to find gold.
Which is apparently illegal. It's illegal. What you're doing is illegal.
Thank you, Herbert Walker Bush.
There you go. That's illegal there. That's what you're doing.
Just say no to bad gold mining.
But so what's happening is Turl thinks he's getting out of this hardship position. He's been there for whatever. And they're like, we'd like you to stay on.
Oh, no, they don't say we'd like you to stay on. we're not letting you stay here for 5 cycles. We're going to make you stay here for 50 cycles with endless options for renewal.
And endless options for renewal. Yes, yeah, endless options for renewal.
Yeah, they repeat it. But like, some reference to him screwing a senator's daughter.
But like the whole idea is that like Forrest Whitaker was going to take over now, and then like you move up the hype. And then at one point, Travolta has a little hissy fit. He's like, I was top of the class at the academy, and they are wasting me here. And you're just like, guys, I don't need any of this backstory. You could just be silent villains. Like,
again, focus on the humans. Make the Cyclos abstract.
But in the book, the Cyclos, the whole gold mining plot is there. So, I mean, they have to be in there somehow.
You know what? Fine. Yeah. If it's in the book, it's in the book. You can read it if you're really that interested in all this stupid fucking bureaucracy. But it doesn't make sense in the movie because they never explain anything.
We do eventually then have to talk about the man animals. The lead one is Johnny Goodboy Tyler, who is played by Barry Pepper. Barry Pepper, who you've seen in good movies, just never as the star for a lot of reasons. The only other major role he really is in, if you guys saw it last year, he was in 2019's Crawl, that horror movie Crawl. Do you see it?
War with the Alligator?
Yeah, so there's a Category 5 hurricane that fills a basement with alligators, and him and his daughter, the swim captain, fight off a bunch of gators, which is something.
I think I referenced this before, but I think of him mostly as that evil agent and enemy of the state that was working for John Voight.
But all these other movies I mentioned that he's good in, he's in 61 as Roger Maris. That's the only other starring vehicle I can think of. He's like the fourth or fifth build in all those other movies, and he's fine as that. But don't put a movie that costs money on his shoulders, because
they didn't put him on his shoulders, though. It was clearly on Travolta's.
Right, but they should have put it on his shoulders, and I don't know at what point they decided against it. In Planet of the Apes, Charlie Heston is the star, and if he's the human, you want the human to save the world. The reason Star Wars works is Darth Vader is scary and on screen for all of 12 minutes, right? The rest of the time, he's creepy and in the background. That makes him the villain.
That is a big problem with this movie. I mean, there's a couple scenes in Star Wars, which obviously the director was copying because he'd worked on the original, which,
sure,
good for him. Like, the end scene with the Harrier jets is clearly the Battle of Yavin.
Dude, 100% the trench run. Yeah.
Well, anyway, though, in Star Wars, they'd occasionally cut to, like, the Empire and the Imperial generals, like, talking about what's going on. But it was never so overwhelming. This movie is like if that one scene with Darth Vader in the boardroom choking the guy had lasted 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good point. You have to keep some of that to explain why he's messing with the man animals, but you don't have to have so much.
Excuse me, Matt, you're mispronouncing me. It's man animals.
And the way man animals. And it's like twitchy and like, and I imagine the headdress thing he's wearing on top of his normal wig is must weigh 30 pounds. Like, he can't move his neck properly. It's something I noticed about halfway through, that he has to turn his whole body to emote anything, and then you put the fucker, him and Forrest Whitaker, on stilts. And the whole thing just looks like they can't move, they can't think.
They can't move, they can't think.
Yes, very good, Matt.
Yeah, nailed it.
But like, we can't advance in the corporate structure.
But that's why Chewbacca and the guy who was the body for Darth Vader are just tall dudes, right? Yeah. Like, you want Travolta to be the star, fine. But you can't also make him 8 feet tall. Like, he cannot walk around on these fucking stilts.
Oh, there's this great scene towards the end where they're trying to blow up, I think, the dome with the breathe gas that's around, what is it, Denver?
Yeah, the Cyclos can't breathe our air. So they build a big dome over the city of Denver, and apparently that's their only base in the movie, because you destroy that and the Cyclos lose control of Earth.
Johnny decides, you know, we're going to blow up that dome. And in the middle of that plan, there's like this scene where one of the other humans, I think it's the one that keeps saying piece of cake,
yes,
which is a tagline in this movie, I guess.
For people who've never eaten cake before.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a scene where he's like on the radio with Johnny going, you got 5 Cyclo guards on you coming up fast. And they're fucking walking like the guards in the Wizard of Oz outside the Wicked Witch's castle.
Yeah, they're not moving that fast, even if they're that tall and probably cover more distance.
I laughed so hard at that scene. I had to pause the movie because I was just laughing that hard. It was so bad.
Oh my God. Do yourselves a favor, listening audience. If you want to figure out who's a Scientologist in this world, look up the pictures from the like the reveal, right? Like the movie. Because can you imagine being invited to the premiere of this thing?
Wasn't Sly Stallone at the premiere?
Sly Stallone was. Tia Carrere was. Noted Scientologist Kirstie Alley is very clearly drunk in all of these pictures. And then a bunch of people I couldn't bother about. Although Kathy Najimy, who is in fan favorite and Daniel's least favorite movie, Hocus Pocus, is also in here.
Wait, she was at the premiere of this movie?
Yeah, and Kirstie Alley is so drunk she's hanging off of her.
Nice.
It's something. Jay Leno was here. Holy shit.
Jay Leno?
With Louis Anderson. The two of them are just hugging. Oh, God help me. So the last half of this movie is nonsense, so we can skip it.
Well, I mean, the first half of this movie is nonsense. We've pretty much explained what's going on. Humans are on the verge of extinction. Cyclos are here, and there's a lot of bureaucratic bullshit that we have to get through. Yeah. And so the main villain comes up with this plan to get off Earth by using humans to mine gold. And the humans use it as an opportunity, specifically Johnny, to rebel against the Cyclos.
Yeah.
And he doesn't lack for ambition. He's like, we're going to take our planet back in 7 days.
Well, I mean, that's another thing about this movie. First, Travolta hooks Johnny up to, like, learn the Cyclo language, which kind of sounds like Wookiee speak if Wookiees were drunk.
Dude, that is nonsense. Because, first of all, when they cut to people, everyone's speaking English, which I'm totally fine with, until they're not speaking English, which then it sounds like nonsense, right? Like, Gene Roddenberry is a lot of things, including, you know, whatever. But he at least thought out what Klingon is supposed to sound like. Same with, you know, Tolkien and, you know, the various languages, right? Like, Elfish is something that they clearly thought about. There's no thinking here. It just is a bunch of grunts with clearly different voice actors.
Didn't previous episode, Atlantis, The Lost Empire, didn't they hire a linguist to create that language?
They did. Which came out almost the same year, right? Wasn't Atlantis 2000, 2001?
2001, I think. But yeah, they actually worked on it.
You got to think this stuff through. And again, that's where you can tell that this movie was all a pyramid scheme. Because like the parts that people should have thought about, they're like, nah, let's just skip it. No one can understand this. This is all nonsense. It looks like nonsense. It feels like nonsense. And, you know, sometimes it quacks and it's a duck.
I just wonder how John Travolta felt when he saw the final product.
Scientology has all this money and so many famous actors, and Battlefield Earth is like their second sacred book, and this is the best they could do?
Well, I will stop.
They have all that Hollywood power, and they suck.
I will make one correction here. This is not considered a sacred text. This is just his most popular book. And so, yes, I agree with you, though. Like, if you want to make LRH a hero, I don't know what, but like he did a lot of like Indiana Jones-esque kind of, you know, again, like Edgar Rice Burroughs nonsense. Do that. Like, do a serial. Like, that would be more fun than this.
Wasn't LRH the name of David Bowie's character in SpongeBob?
It may have been. That's funny. But you're right. I mean, there are a lot of, like, I also get the feeling that this script went across Tom Cruise's desk, and he sent it right back.
Well, here's the other thing.
I could swear Tom Cruise is one of the Cyclos, like one of the ones that Johnny kills early on.
I think he distanced himself far, far away from this.
Tom Cruise would be half the size of the other Cyclos, let's be honest.
Bigger stilts.
The littlest Cyclo.
Well, the other thing, Matt, that I do want to point out is you talk about how they have a lot of power, the Church of Scientology, and a lot of famous actors. At this point, they really don't. Yeah. They have a couple famous people like Tom Cruise and John Travolta, but overall, their membership's been on the downward spiral for a while. Now, they do have a lot of money, but nothing that would really influence anything.
Well, money, they could at least invest in a better screenwriter.
Yes, but remember, this is all a pyramid scheme. All that money goes back into Scientology, right? Like, I don't think this is anything like the original script, even. Right? Because the book is 1,000 pages.
Yeah, the Cyclos are defeated about a third of the halfway through the book. Then all this other crap happens.
The movie only covers the first half of the book?
More or less.
Right. I mean, I was asking you, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, because then there's all this politicking and nonsense that happened after the Cyclos are defeated. So I think they wanted a sequel.
Oh, they were clearly aiming for a sequel because they literally end by flying off towards the planet or whatever.
Well, they end with John Travolta in a cage in Fort Knox, which whatever. I guess it's meant to be a reference to Greed, speaking of movies from the 1920s that we were talking about earlier.
I mean, it's practically a reference to Goldfinger, for God's sake. Like, it's all bad.
Yeah, because they're saying, you know, the reason we haven't killed you is because they might be useful as a bargaining chip or leverage.
Leverage.
I mean, you're right. It is leverage and yada yada yada. I mean, this is where the Dianetic stuff really comes in, because the whole idea is that they have stuff on you, yada yada yada. But like, the thing is, people were talking about, what's that fucking After Earth? That's Will Smith movie. That was supposed to also be secretly a Scientology movie. At least that's a movie on its own.
Oh, that trailer had one of the dumbest lines I've ever heard. Everything on this planet has evolved to kill man or something like that, which makes no sense.
Poor M. Night Shyamalan. That was one that Will Smith apparently directed and then blamed Shyamalan for.
Yeah.
Right? In that same way that I don't know who this poor director is. I mean, I know who this poor director is, but this is clearly Travolta's work. And he is blaming someone else because he's not a part of the Directors Guild of America. So,
what's up with the scenes in this movie with the Battle Royale collars?
He had a bomb collar on Chrissy, Johnny's girlfriend, as leverage.
Oh, the one that looked like Alanis Morissette?
Yep.
Yeah, and then at some point, you know, he managed to bargain with Forrest Whitaker to get the bomb collar off her, and then he put it on Turl when Turl wasn't looking.
Yeah, and then Turl had his arm blown off. But wasn't there a scene where he's got it on another one of Johnny's friend? That's Turl, and Johnny is in a position where he could kill Travolta. And then he just gives this like giant, stupid Braveheart speech about how he's not going to do that. And then Travolta has Forrest Whitaker kill that guy anyway.
Yeah, what was Forrest Whitaker's character's name? It wasn't
Kerr, I think.
Kerr, yes.
Kerr and Turl, that sounds right.
I mean, and there's also another 24 nameless, faceless cyclos that we see floating around the background that don't do much.
Dreadlock goons and trench coats.
And at one point, Johnny kills like 3 of them by accident.
I kind of like Matt's description there. It's like Homer Simpson gets a knock on his door. Who's there? Goons. Goons. Dreadlocked goons. Dreadlocked goons?
Yeah, except the dreadlock goons in this one, they just stand around and move very slowly and don't seem to react very much. Like the climax of the movie, they have like humans rioting in Denver and they're like just breaking a lot of windows of buildings that are like, who cares? And the cyclos respond very slowly.
Well, except piece of cake guy says they're responding fast.
I have no answers. Like the end of this movie, I also have to emphasize, we mentioned all this in chunks because who could be bothered with this movie? But Turl's idea is to train the man animals into doing stuff. He picks Johnny because Johnny is clearly the most advanced. Because he's taken a gun and shot 2 cyclos, among other things. And so he does this very matrixy, plugs him into a computer, trains him super quick. Then there's a flight simulator where Johnny keeps failing and he goes, if you crash again, I'll kill you. And then he doesn't crash again, which again seems very Scientology.
A little incentive goes a long way. I forget the line. It was something along those
lines.
Was
it incentive or leverage?
No, it was incentive this time.
But again, it's very Scientology.
Now, I was reminded less of The Matrix and more of Lawnmower Man.
Well, the graphics are Lawnmower Man-esque, but it's very much like, I know Kung Fu. I can fly a Harrier jet. Like it's
yeah, in the book, that he managed to get Cyclos to let him train all his people using a Cyclotech. All I just remember is they find a Harrier simulator and somehow train a caveman to fly a fighter jet in a week.
Okay, now here's another among many things. Here's another stupid thing about this movie. After he trains Johnny, it's like, okay, we're dropping you off here. You have 14 days to mine gold. And that's when he uses time to like help train people how to fly Harrier jets and how to rebel against the Cyclos. Why the hell are they leaving Johnny alone?
No, I mean, you're right. Nothing makes sense.
I think the Cyclos are just that arrogant.
Well, especially when they bring back gold bars.
Yeah. He's because he thinks... He just doesn't. He doesn't look a gift horse in the mouth. He has all the gold.
Well,
and then he doesn't ask questions as to why.
Well, one question doesn't follow up.
They are stupid. I'm just saying. But he's like, huh? If you can get gold this easy,
If you have time to smelt the ore into bars.
That's right. He cuts down the time, right?
Right.
For whatever, which means nothing. None of this means anything.
Which, why would that be his question? I mean, why didn't he ask, okay, where'd you get the gold bars from? Why is it, oh, you obviously had technology to smelt the gold into bars.
Right. I mean,
you obviously have too much time in your hands. That makes no sense.
Yeah, I have a review I have partly written that'll go live when the podcast does. I lead with, I have the good and the bad and the bad. Everyone is an idiot.
I'm surprised you have anything labeled good. The good.
It's so bad it's funny in places. Maybe leave it on at a party in the background. Maybe.
Very different parties that I do, I guess. I can't imagine showing this to anyone. It feels like a punishment. I felt bad watching this. I felt bad thinking of watching this. I felt bad.
This is your punishment for being late to my party.
That's right.
Yeah. This movie. So obviously the last 30 minutes are the only pieces in this movie with any real action, because that's when the humans rise up and break windows and rage against the machine. And
it all starts because the non-Johnny people are setting up plastic explosives and dynamite chunks everywhere to make cracks in the dome, right?
Yeah.
And then
well, they're trying to break the dome. The explosives just don't work until the piece of cake guy blows himself up in the plane.
Literally, it ends the way Randy Quaid dies in Independence Day.
Yeah, because there's another guy who gets teleported to Cyclo and with a nuclear bomb.
Oh, yeah.
And blows himself and ultimately the entire planet into a cheapo version of the end of Alderaan.
Mickey, right? That was the guy?
That's Mickey. And, this whole end of the movie kind of nonsense is, literally, they teleport a hydrogen bomb to the surface of Cyclo, which blows up the entire planet. This is we see Cyclo a couple times, and it's a city planet. It looks like an urban hellscape, an industrial hellscape, excuse me. And the whole planet vaporizes.
Well, it starts a fireball that eventually covers the entire atmosphere, and then the planet blows up.
Yeah, because uranium ignites the atmosphere of the planet. So basically a dirty bomb fueled by a nuke. But then it blows up the whole planet itself, not just setting everything on fire.
To be fair, it's radiation, which I assume would exist anyway, because radiation is a naturally occurring thing.
Yeah, they have a sun.
Well, yeah.
Also, we've blown up hydrogen bombs on our planet. That's not what hydrogen bombs do to anything. This is just all, utter nonsense. And what's funny is, you can't even say, well, this is something he wrote before that. No, this was written in 1982. Like, we knew what hydrogen bombs had done for decades.
Isn't, and I hate to go down this route, but I'm going to, because fuck this movie. Isn't that why the Nazis didn't try and seriously look into developing an atomic bomb?
Oh, no, they tried to. They actually did.
Well, they thought it would ignite the atmosphere.
Well, some people did. The Nazi thing was just really super racist and chased all their best scientists.
Well, I mean, they tried, but their money went elsewhere. But they were developing rockets to do just that. The war just ended. We ended up with it, and we're like, let's fuck it, let's see. Because we did test one in the desert.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But yeah, you can look it up.
Now, supposedly the reason that it ignites is because the atmosphere on planet Cyclo is different than it is on Earth, but I still don't understand how that would work.
Yeah, no, because it doesn't make sense. It's just, literally just a science MacGuffin. They're like, and the nuke comes up so late. They discover at one point they infiltrate a base. Like they said, somehow Fort Knox gets involved even though they're in Denver.
Fort Knox is the gold. Fort Hood is the guns.
Right, but still, we're jetting all over this planet for no reason.
Yeah, and meanwhile they have everyone
don't notice.
Because they still have, because every time they send their drone to watch them, everyone is at work.
Great. Spoof
them.
So in Fort Hood, they discover the blueprints for a hydrogen bomb, I guess, which is just fantastic.
Good Lord, that entire sequence, and this is the second Simpsons reference I'm going to make, when Sideshow Bob tried to blow up Springfield with a nuke. And
God bless the idiot-proof Navy.
Yeah.
Air Force.
Yeah.
Well, that, and when he tried to do it, it was best used before 1952. How does the bomb here still work?
Well, and how do you get it? That's the other thing. It's not just the bombs are lying around. I imagine when the people die, the things are just sealed up? I don't know.
Also, if they do work, then wouldn't the uranium also kill the people that are handling it?
I don't.
Not necessarily.
It's not like they're eating it.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking of that other movie that I'm sure we're going to do at some point, The Sum of All Fears, where somebody finds a...
Oh, God, it puts it in a box. It's like a vending machine?
It's not a vending machine. Well, actually, yes, you're right. It is a vending machine. But the people that initially find the missile end up dying of radiation poisoning. How is that not happening here?
Because maybe that's not how it really works.
I would trust...
I would trust The Sum of All Fears.
I would trust
the movie
Tom,
or the book.
I would trust Tom Clancy before I trust L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know what he's talking about, a broken arrow goes down over Israel, and it's recovered by a terrorist group who then blows up a stadium where the NBA Finals is happening.
In Baltimore, yeah.
Yeah, in order to try and start a war between the U.S. and Russia.
Right, and the president was supposed to be there that night, but gets out at the last minute. President Morgan Freeman.
No, he wasn't the president.
It was Cromwell.
Yes, James Cromwell from L.A. Confidential was the president.
And Babe.
Movie. Yes, and Babe.
Academy Award nominated Babe, right? Wasn't he?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure previous if he episode. Was, but the movie certainly was.
A previous episode.
Yeah, but they find a cruise missile. They take the bomb out, which, as I mentioned earlier, Amazon throws in like a little factoid that would disable it completely for obvious reasons so no one can steal it.
Man, I wish I'd watched this on Amazon. I watched this on Tubi, but they didn't include anything.
You didn't waste $4. That's an improvement. You didn't give money to a UFO cult.
Or Jeff Bezos.
Isn't it Bezos?
Yeah, whatever. He doesn't own me. I'll pronounce his name however I want. But yeah.
The movie ends with humanity taking back Earth. Kerr is back on their side. Travolta's locked in a cage surrounded by gold bars, missing an arm, and... what's the final line? Kerr is like laughing at Travolta and saying, "Well, you finally got the gold."
Leverage, Scientology, thetans. I don't know.
The book gets much more into the Scientology stuff, like the evil psychiatrist making them evil or something.
Oh, good Lord.
That even they knew they couldn't include that in this movie.
Who knows what the sequel would have looked like?
What happens in the last half of the book?
Basically, all these other alien races show up on Earth and want to take advantage of the fact that only about 40,000 humans left. And there's a lot of capitalist skullduggery about who owns Earth and paying reparations for the damage the Cyclo Empire did. And evil psychiatrists.
And my eyes have rolled back into my head.
This is, I told Matt, this has turned me off from anything that is science fiction for at least 3 months. I can't, like...
Yeah.
Because now, like, even if I watched decent sci-fi, I would just see the holes through it, because this just ruined me on every... That's why I'm gonna watch a greased up Belgian punch people next, like, because there's no mythology, there's nothing. It's just punching. I can watch punching. This movie has nothing. Happy 300th episode, gentlemen.
Oh God, you sure picked a great one for episode 300.
Yeah, I mean,
this is Colorado.
Someone wanted us to do Ultraviolet at one point, and I'm like, I don't know if I can bring myself to watch.
We should do Equilibrium at one point.
We should.
Did you like that movie?
I haven't actually seen it.
I haven't seen it since college.
Oh, sorry, you said it so excited. I thought that you liked it. Well, I honestly...
The book I plugged at the beginning of the podcast, The Atlanta Incursion, there's a scene where they're watching Equilibrium. It's all connected.
The Matt Quinn Extended Universe, ladies and gentlemen. You're learning about it here.
You are, absolutely. And learning about what I heard was one of the worst, also one of the worst, that director, because Ultraviolet is terrible, too.
Kurt Wimmer.
Kurt Wimmer, yeah, that's right.
Ultraviolet, is that a vampire movie?
Kinda.
Because I swear there's a vampire movie called Ultraviolet.
That's what I'm talking about, although they're only kind of vampires in that vampirism is a disease, and the people infected want to affect the rest of the planet.
I heard that movie was like 2 hours long, and then they cut it to hell, and that's why it's so incomprehensible.
That's what Vimmer claims. I don't think it would have helped. I saw half of it once, I think, thanks to a riff tracks, possibly. But, like, it's just, whoo.
Well, you know who's better than John Travolta in this movie is whoever was in Ultraviolet, Mila
Jovovich.
Jovovich, yes.
God, this movie's terrible. Daniel, final thoughts?
All right, so here was one of the notes I had. If this is the world that L. Ron Hubbard envisioned, then he's remarkably dumb. I'm sorry. I don't know how good of an adaptation this is of a book. I've never read it. I'm not sure if I ever will. But my God, this is just pathetically dumb. Every decision made in this movie was the wrong one, from Travolta's hammy performance to the director's art direction. We didn't even mention the use of middle wipes, which I assume was meant to be a reference to the
Star Wars,
to the Kurosawa wipes that a Star Wars yeah. used. But it was so much worse here. Good Lord. I don't know who thought this was a good idea outside of Travolta, but I'm sure everybody involved in this movie is ashamed of themselves now.
Amazon popped up and said Forrest Whitaker has, you know, renounced the film or something like that.
He's a smart man, so I'm sure he has.
What about you, Matt? I mean,
it felt longer than it was because it was stupid. I'm giving it I'm on my review, my blog, a 4 out of 10, which is better than the Spawn, which I gave a 3 out of 10. Don't waste your time and don't give these people money.
And I saw it with Zach. It was fine. At one point, I got this movie 1,000 years ago for free when I got a DVD copy for nothing that people were just throwing out. It deserved to stay in the garbage. There have been reviews of us in our years that we essentially just reference IMDb. So I will reference something just out of pure spite since this is episode 300. Why not? This is from Roger Ebert's review. Quote, Battlefield Earth is like taking a bus trip with someone who has needed a bath for a long time. It's not merely bad. It's unpleasant in a hostile way. The visuals are grubby and drab. The characters are unkempt and have rotten teeth. The breathing tubes hang from their nose like ropes of snot. The soundtrack is like a boom mic being slammed against the inside of a 55-gallon drum. The plot, ellipses, and then he just goes off. I just want to add this last bit. Battlefield Earth was written in 1980 by L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology. This film contains no evidence of Scientology or any other system of thought. It is shapeless and senseless without compelling plot or characters that we care for in the slightest. R.I.P. that beautiful man.
I remember reading that review back in the day. Oh.
Yeah, that's perfect.
That brings me more nostalgia than this movie.
Yeah, you know what? I love the man. This movie. See, and the thing is, sometimes these movies are bad in a fun way. This is not. It's just a trial. Don't watch this. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for 300 episodes, and here's to 300 more before I have to murder all of you. I've been Nick.
I've been Daniel.
I am Matt.
Thanks, everyone. Review, rate, join the Patreon.
My Opium Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reibel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.